We conclude today's program with Sky Wilson interviewing Kent Ford, co-founder of the Portland chapter of the Black Panther Party, about the role of radical Black tradition in our world today. Sky?
This is Sky Wilson for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I have the pleasure of being here today with Mr. Kent Ford, elder street fighting statesman. Mr. Ford is a founding member of the Portland chapter of the Black Panther Party, Portland Panthers. In 1969, he and other Portland Panthers helped organize the Fred Hampton Memorial People's Health Clinic that extended free medical care 5 evenings a week, and the Malcolm X People's Dental Clinic, with providers seeing patients 3 evenings a week, and a free breakfast program at the Highland Community Church of Christ that fed up to 125 children a day. I want to say that last piece again. They worked and organized to feed 125 children a day. Welcome, Mr. Ford.
Thank you, Sky. Good to be here.
So, Mr. Ford, what do you see as the role of the radical Black tradition in our world today?
It was no longer to be the radical Black tradition, that be from the grassroots, everybody participate like we did since the murder of George Floyd last year. Everybody hit the streets, stay in the streets until, you know, we put stuff on the table, until defunding the police and tuition-free education or Medicare for all, until we get all the vaccines out to everybody and until we get everything done. This is our time now.
With that in mind, what is it about this time that you think has energized people to the degree that it has in this past year? You know, people taking to the streets, there's been this ongoing organizing and response in the street. What do you think it is about this time that has spurred that?
First of all, this fell out to our left, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, young man Blake, you know, and so we have to answer the call and get everything on the table and put everything on the table and deal with it. Defunding the police. It's the amount of people from all walks of life, you know, from Vancouver, Washington, Oregon. You know, it's time to move then.
Yes, sir. What do you see as the biggest barrier to realizing justice in our world today?
Okay, you had over 70 million people that voted for the other guy. And as soon as the guy we went after, you know, he was talking about reaching Obama. First time he was in the House and the Senate. And he still wanted to reach across the aisle. Oh, that's over with now. Your city ain't no good. Get up off of me. Move on with your agenda. You got the virus here. We got to get vaccines out to everybody. We got the homeless problem.
Thank you for moving us in that direction. Seems like this past year has been marked by a series of compounding crises, pandemic, the expressions of state violence, some of which you've already spoken to, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and the effects of global climate change, the smoke that saturated our space. What lessons has the COVID-19 pandemic revealed that we need to make sure we don't forget after it's over?
Thank you. You know the lady that wrote the book, The God of Small Things, Aradati Roy?
Yes.
Well, she has an article when the virus first hit about a year ago. And she said, let this be a lesson that we don't be kicking everybody to the curb. The world belongs to everybody. It's a well thought out written article. You know, you can put it up in the Guardian. You can also pull it up in the Financial Times. That's where it first appeared in. Check that out. She lays it all out right there. Like she lays out everything.
Is that Arundhati Roy piece, the pandemic is a portal?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the piece, young man. Thank you. It's for everybody to be included. Everybody's got to be tested. Besides just George Floyd thing and the murders of Black people in America, this hit the whole world. We have to deal with it now. And you have over 70 million people that voted for the opposition. And now, you know, the incoming president, he wants to reach out to them and include everybody. They didn't want to include us. Forget them. And if he had a handled the virus halfway right, he would have won. But the American people say that he didn't handle the virus right. He acted like it wasn't even there. But they live a life that we don't even dream about living. What could they care about us?
What struck me so much about that is Arundhati Roy speaks to that this pandemic we will move through it, but what it looks like on the other end will be dependent upon what we do. And are we going to keep dragging these old institutions, these old ways of knowing with us? Or are we going to create something new?
Exactly. If you pull up James Baldwin and you pull up Malcolm, the young people today we're fortunate to have, we can pull up this stuff on YouTube now, and the speeches and everything. Baldwin at Berkeley, Malcolm at Oxford, the interviews and the life. And you take the new book that's out on Malcolm now, The Dead Are Rising. You can see where we came from, and it brings us right up to speed today. You hit it on the head, you know, with what you just said, Scotty. We have to deal with it. And we have Biden in there now. We got a chance to get this environmental thing straight now. He's going to try to put the man in a very difficult position. Just the other day, look what he did with Cuba. He put him on a terrorist list, the terrorist blacklist. And who knows, he's probably hit Iran before he gets out of office. That's how treacherous he is. Just like he executed that poor lady who's been in prison for 30 or 40 years the other night. And the more is to come before he gets out of office.
Another piece that I've been returning to this year has been Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism.
Yes.
In which she makes the argument that it's in the middle of crisis, in the middle of the shock, it's hard to create the structure that will help us create a future of justice. But it is the people organizing, the people planning before these crises that then become really agents in what it looks like on the other end. Where do you see the organizing happening right now that is creating kind of these new ways or creative ways to realize justice so that as we move forward, we won't be stuck in the same place when the next crisis hits?
Exactly. Another 10, 15, 20, 25, 50 years. That's for your kids. We have to make it right for them. But I like what you said. The struggle is still in the streets. You know, on the street corner. Malcolm said, let your blood run in the streets. That's what happened in Minneapolis. Overnight, they abolished the police. Defunding the police is on the table now. Put the funds in the mental health. Put the funds in the homelessness. Tuition-free education. Again, not only that, Medicare for all. Our neighbors to the north in Canada, they have Medicare for everybody. We're the richest industrialized country in the world, and we still don't have it. A bunch of old, half-dead white men running things, you know, we'll never get it. Look what happened in the Capitol the other day. The young lady out of New York, the Cortez woman, and Ayanna Priestley, they completely disabled them in the Capitol when they came in. They took a walking tour of the Capitol a couple of weeks ago that was by the Republican Party, members of the Republican Party. You had a Republican senator out there giving them the white power sign. Down in Salem, the Capitol, last week there, you have one of the guys in the legislature open the door for him to let him in the Capitol. I don't want to use the word deep, but here in Portland, we had the mayor of Portland had to come down and ask a young black man, could he use his platform to say Black Lives Matter back during the summer? We accomplished more in 50 or 60 years since the George Floyd's assassination than civil rights accomplished in over 50 years or 60 years. And that's not stretching it. I mean, you got the people in your world. I marched with a professor all summer long. I called some of my other friends that are professors and teachers in black studies. So I said, you guys come on down and speak from Lewis and Clark, you know, from Oregon State to Portland State. And some of the brothers and sisters came down and actually spoke at the Justice Center. An 82-year-old nun came all the way up from Mexico just to be a part of this. She would sit out there every night across it in the park on her walker and pass out pocket lawyers to the people. And the thing is, you know, these kind of movements, they're hard to sustain. Now we have to maintain them and sustain them and maintain them. It's real easy, you know, with the amount of people we had out in the streets. The riffraff is going to fall to the wayside. You don't have to deal with that no more. You have all positive people out in the streets. You have the real Rainbow Coalition. The Fred Hampton started back in the 60s. It wasn't Jesse Jackson that started the Rainbow Coalition. He came up with that after Fred Hampton was assassinated.
Right. With that in mind, can you speak to the concept of radical or revolutionary alliances across identity? So, you know, one thing that we've seen again recently is kind of the level of state violence that may be specific to communities, but is absolutely connected. I'm thinking of kind of the level of state violence in the street, the police murders, and the brown people in cages on the southern border. Can you speak to what it takes to activate and engage those kinds of alliances and those connections?
Thank you for the question, Sky. I want to go back to the war on terror. Just the other day, Guantanamo Bay, it's still open after all these years. Those guys have been taking no man's land. Some of them indeed may never return. Well, the British knew it was bull. They got all their guys out of there. The Saudis knew it was bull. They got all their guys out of there. And then you got some defenders still there. I once ran into a human rights lawyer. She had been there 33 times. And she said it was so painful to her every time she goes, she just couldn't go there. That said, and don't you think on the southern border, Obama was the choir boy? Oh, no, he wasn't. He was just about as ruthless as the guy we got now. But that said, you talk about the southern border, you know, and the Rainbow Coalition and the people that started all this and that. Well, it was Fred Hampton. The Appalachian whites came and got Fred, took him down to Appalachian with him. A lot of people don't know, but Fred was a NAACP youth organizer and voter registration organizer, just like the late Cesar Abrams was down in Georgia. He was registering people to vote before he came in to be the chairman of the party. And Bobby Rush, the only man who was able to beat Barack Obama in any election, the only election Barack Obama lost was to Bobby Rush, who was the co-chairman of the Illinois chapter of Black Panther Party. But the only reason they didn't dust Bobby Rush that night because they couldn't find him. And they had a bogus warrant out for him. That what came to light. But they intended to dust both of them that night. But get back to the southern border. What's going on down there? You know, it's against all laws of human rights. And they don't care. The conditions in some of those places are like the real banana republics. Original banana republic. Well, we control all that. We invade them at will. Like I said, we got 800 military installments in over two-thirds of the world's countries. Now, you know, they're looking at us now. How can you come tell us about our problem, show us how to fix our problem? And you got, right now, we got National Guard in the Capitol. So right now, 20,000 National Guard troops are encircling the Capitol. Biden can't even catch the train in Washington. They got to bring him in probably in the armored car to swear him in. The country brought this on themselves. They put a fascist in charge. What is it? Fascist in, fascist out. Just like in the computer. You put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out.
Thank you. Both in the Panther program and in your work, it always prioritizes the unification of body and soul. Londo Nelson's text, A Body and Soul, beautiful piece. Can you speak about the significance of the relationship between body and soul to your organizing work? And the significance of it to continuing this work in our current context?
Thank you. Thank you. I like that question. I was just telling the students out of Pacific University, the struggle is still in the streets. You know, you got to let your blood run in the streets. We hit the streets, and the people will see us out there every day. If you don't have a quarter to buy a newspaper, we'll give you one. We have a meeting here tonight. We see them on the street corner. Johnson had relocated 80% of the Vietnamese population and still couldn't win the war. Bombing people with no air defense. This is not me talking. This is our Senator Wayne Morris from Oregon. He's passed away now. He used to come and visit the People's Health Clinic that we started. Seen him speak in 1964, Scott, probably a little before your time, at the Memorial Coliseum where the Trailblazers used to play. And he said, they're bombing people with no air defense. He said, you get in a land war in Asia, half of them going to come home in body bags. And I've been there before, 60,000 of them didn't come home in body bags. But it's because of the people that hit the streets in the Vietnam War, the people that rode it out in Canada. Over 100,000 people went to Canada right after the Vietnam War. The minute Carter became president in 1976, 2 weeks after the office, he pardoned everybody that went to Canada from the Vietnam War. Anyway, I'm saying all that to say this. The struggle is still in the streets, just like since Murrow Day, George Floyd's assassination, when it hit. You had op-eds in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and until we get this Palestinian thing straightened out, you know, they stop building those settlements over there. Just day before yesterday, the big man over there, won't even call his name, 800 more settlements, taking these people's land away. Same thing they did in Northeast Portland with the gentrification. I was invited to a panel down in Portland State with a guy down there, and he wrote a spineless careerism. You know, the head of the Black Studies Department down there was supposed to be on the panel with him down there and to talk about gentrification. Well, I said, okay, where were you, man? You were down there over 50 years. You studied this. You knew this was happening, but you told nobody in the community about it. Now you're retired, you know, you got this boom, you got this, Now you want to talk about a gentrification. It's too late now, Sky. Mm-hmm. It's much too late. It's gone. And so I said, no, I'll text him back. And I said, I see who's all on the panel. But this guy, I just don't do. And I didn't bite my tongue on it. You know, we get blacks in position of power and influence, but nothing ever changes for the rank and file down on the street, going on. Nothing ever changes for us. Oh, we get food stamps, maybe a little, since the virus, we get a little this and a little that, you know, a grocery card or a grocery box or something like that, a U.S. bank card, but nothing ever changes for the rank and file on the street. Cooperative America has failed black people. Look at the homeless problem. I don't know whether you've been to Portland later. Go down by the Coliseum. Go down by the Rose Garden. Turn off on any freeway, Sky. You can see what the problem is. I don't need to tell you. Your eyes is open.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Ford, for your time here today. I just appreciate so much your ability to make connections that are so key to make and seem so challenging for some people to make these connections. And so I really just appreciate the scope of the connections across history and across communities that is so necessary for us to make a future.
Thank you. Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Ford. It's as always, it's been an absolute pleasure. This has been Sky with the Old Mole Variety Hour.